Hello, Graham. How are you?
Why'd you slurp so much?
It was just, I thought it would be like a nice way, a nice start to the podcast, a slurp, a nice refreshing cup of tea.
Well, it is a sign of respect in Japan, isn't it? But
what's slurp a brew?
Well, I think slurping food in general is seen as like, you know, like slurping ramen or noodles or whatever is seen as a sign of satisfaction. So slurp away, brother, slurp away.
Is it the same if you get food on your shirt or stuck in your beard? Is that a sign of respect? Because if it is, I'd be very respectful indeed.
You'd be a god in Japan.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Where are you up to on Below Deck?
Oh, yeah, Below Deck. I'm on season 5 now. So, yeah, it's all changed. Lots of newbies ruining everything for Captain Lee.
Yeah.
God damn it. That's what he says every episode.
Anyone who hasn't seen it, we've become really hooked on this program called Below Deck, which is on Amazon. Have you got a Hey You subscription now?
Well, I've had to, because it's only 2 seasons on Netflix.
So Below Deck, for anyone that doesn't know, is a reality TV program. It's basically Geordie Shore or Jersey Shore if you're in America, but on a yacht. But yeah. It's so deliciously Moorish.
It is. It's so good. It's kind of, I don't know, it just reminds me of just everything wrong with TV, but somehow that makes it better. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Too much slurping.
Yeah, it's quality. Too much slurping. Yeah, we're on, Hey You. Yeah, if you watch it, like, this is how they get you. So you get the first 2 seasons, don't you? And then for season 3, you've got to get a Hey You subscription, which is a reality TV streaming platform. But you can just subscribe to it with a click of a button on Amazon. So I subscribe to it. I don't know how it's got my details. I don't know when they're taking payment or what. So we're trying to get it all finished before payment comes out. But it is. Well, actually, in preparation, I looked up some of the best Captain Lee quotes.
I
read them out.
Come on, let's have some.
So, I can't get to them, can I? Because my internet's gone off. So
what?
Just pulling a couple out of thin air. One of my favourites is, you couldn't drive a straight pin up my ass with a £10 sledgehammer.
Excellent.
I like a deckhand without an arm is about as much use as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking competition. And wow. I think it was about some of the other guests, wasn't it? I'd rather drag my dick through 10 miles of broken whiskey bottles than have them on my boat again.
Yeah, we had one today that was, I'm madder than a pissed on chicken.
Oh, that's the classic. How did I miss that one? Yeah, haven't seen Below Deck, go and check it out on Amazon. It is 100%, like, it's got us through the last few weeks of lockdown.
Yeah, it's a good show. Good trash TV.
What else have you been up to?
Well, I'm having a really exciting day here because there's some fellas at my house replacing the guttering on our house. So that's... that's something you get to worry about when you grow up. Is my drainage adequate? No, it turns out is the answer. So that's being...
Something we all really should think about more.
Yeah, I think it's an important topic. And the other thing that made me feel old, last night, I thought I had a nose hair that was bothering me. It was sticking out my nostril. So I went and got some tweezers. Honestly, mate, I was like, my eyes were just... So I was teared up so much at pulling this thing out. It's awful. Like, I don't remember when I got nose hairs or when I was aware of them, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be that. You know that fella you always see, like, in a pub or just out and about, who's got, like, the absolutely mad, like, eyebrows that are just going off in every direction?
Yeah.
That's going to be me when I'm older, I think.
Yeah, that when you see a walking eyebrow and there's a small man attached to it.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's going to be me.
Grim. I've, my wife, Claire, I don't know if I mentioned this, my wife is a spa manager, so I get, like, fairly regularly waxed. Not, like, intimately, but, like, my face, because I'm a hairy dude. And she does my nostrils, but she gets, like, I don't know what you call them, like, the lollipop sticks that you use for waxing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So she dips
them
in wax, and she sticks them up my nostrils, so they're hanging out like that. You can't, you can imagine what I'm doing. And then she yanks them out, and it feels like it's going to be the worst pain in the world, but it's actually, it doesn't really hurt. It's weird. It's like the build-up is worse than when it happens. Maybe I'll bring some of her wax around next time I see you and I'll do it for you.
Well, I'm a bit worried now because it sounds like you derive some form of sexual pleasure from this. So,
I mean, yeah, if I get a little bit of enjoyment along the way, sue me.
I think in America, you probably can get sued for something like that.
I reckon I could sue Claire.
Yeah. Might be a difficult one. But yeah, the other thing that's been fun in the last couple of weeks is when lockdown was lifted or eased, which has now been reversed in Manchester. We've gone back to it.
Back to the primitive.
Yeah. F all this coronavirus. My mum came around, mum and dad came around, and they brought this big box with them. And it was loads of stuff from our house, my childhood home, that I just hadn't seen in forever. Loads of like old pictures, like kind of just stuff from me being a kid. And there was a big box inside that box of school reports. And pretty disheartening, got to be honest. I thought I was a decent student.
Is there no glimmer of hope as your future as a successful podcaster?
Well, yeah, I thought, like, don't get me wrong, like, I was never like a straight A student or anything. I was always probably, you know, kind of mid-table or whatever, but I was friendly because they say the word friendly. Each teacher says the word friendly at least once in these reports.
That's a cop-out. That's their way of saying I don't know what else to say about you. It's got a nice personality.
But yeah, I thought, do you know what? Let's read a couple of them out. Let's see what people thought of 14, 15, 16-year-old Graham back in the day.
Hit me.
And it's like, this is like, this is your life, but it's all negative. There's nothing good. So this first one, this is from year 10. So I would have been like 15. This is my form teacher. Now in America, I don't know if they have this. I've asked Kristen. I think it might be a bit different. But in the UK, we have form teachers. So like your form room is where it's your class where you like hang out, you know, lunchtime before the start of the day, whatever. So bear in mind, I didn't get much interaction really with my form tutor, but he still had this to say about me. Graham is an over-enthusiastic member of the form. His contributions are frequent and usually inappropriate. He must learn the importance of listening to others.
I notice it says nothing about the actual subject.
Well, he was my form tutor, so I suppose there wasn't really...
Oh, yeah, I get you. Anyway,
a subject per se. Yeah, Graham must learn the importance of listening to others and valuing their opinions. Harsh.
Which you have done because you're now on a podcast interviewing musicians.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. whoever it was. I can't even remember his name.
Mr. Belding.
Yeah, Mr. Belding. There's one from my art teacher, which is pretty sad, that says, I've tried to guide Graham with areas of his work to enable him to get the best marks possible. However, he has been rather unresponsive.
I tried.
Yeah, seriously. It's like...
Do you know what? When you get a bad review in art or bad report in art, that's kind of like... That's the worst because art is sort of like the fallback thing, isn't it? It's like, well, you just do a bit of painting, you know, and if you get a bad review in art, then that's it. Like, I don't think there's any hope for you.
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's, you know, not that I'm putting down art, but it's the one thing that I should have done well at. There's one here from my maths teacher that says, Graham is a cheerful, friendly lad who should be achieving more than he is.
So, oh my god,
he wastes too much time talking to others. Well, look how that's worked out, pal.
Up yours, Mr. whatever, Killjoy.
Yeah, so it's been
I think I was similar. I think I was always like, I don't know, I did well at my GCSEs. I did well, but and then because I actually worked really hard at my GCSEs because I was like, do you used to get put on report at school?
Yeah, like monitoring.
Yeah. So again, anyone that doesn't know about what report is, if it's basically you have to, you get a sheet of paper, don't you, for each day. You have to take it to each lesson, and each teacher has to like write on it and say, like, you know, whatever. Graham talks too much. Kieran is really good looking and he's distracting all the girls. You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I worked really hard on my GCSEs because I think I was like one of the oldest people in my school to be put on report. I think I was put on report in my GCSE year. And I remember my parents having a bit of a word with me about it, and they were like, just pull your socks up, yeah. So I worked really hard for GCSEs and got really good results, but then I didn't in my A-levels.
Yeah, I got a weird section. I got a weird batch of results in my A-levels. I got an A, a C, and an E. So I technically aced my A-levels, but... Yeah.
I got an F, an A, an I, and an L.
I found another one. This is the worst, I think.
Oh, yeah, go on.
This was for science. Graham is a friendly member of the group. He works best alone and needs constant supervision to achieve any useful work. God, it's awful. Like, it's proper brutal.
It'd be interesting to know whether reporters are like that nowadays, because I think they were a bit more brutal 15, 20 years ago, weren't they? Whereas now they might be a bit more encouraging.
Yeah. I hope so, because, if Logan gets... I don't know. My parents always seem to come home from parents' evening, and they were like... I'd always, like, dread it a little bit, even though I didn't think I was that bad. And they were always like, yeah, it was fine. I wonder if they were just masking their disappointment.
Well, we've had a bit of a tough week. Little Dwight. Little Dwight had his balls taken off last week, last Monday. It was proper sad. I didn't think I'd get, like, sort of set about a dog going for an operation, but...
I was just going to say, Dwight is a dog, just in case you've missed previous episodes. Yeah.
My son, Dwight, went through, he had the ritual last weekend, back to living in the country again. Dwight Wicker, man. Oh, yeah, so Dwight... actually, like, I do want to give a shout-out to the adoption place where we got him from, because... So Dwight is a frog, so he's half French bulldog, half pug, and pugs are quite notorious for having health problems. So we got him from this charity. We got him quite young before he was of age to have his neutering done. So they said to us, you know, we'll give you, you can have the dog. And then when he's of age, you know, we'll book him in and we'll pay whatever it is, 100, 150 quid to get him neutered. So we dropped him off. And we had to drive like an hour to get to this place because this is like a recommended place they go to for his breed. And then we got a phone call on the way back saying that obviously he was having his balls taken off. But also he had two hernias, which they'd found, which I think was something to do with from birth. I think that's like a birth thing. And because he's got quite a squashed face, he couldn't breathe as well. So they had to operate on his nose to open up his nose. He's got two stitches hanging out his nose at the minute. Obviously his manhood's gone. And then they had to sew these hernias up. And it was like the most sad day of my life.
Ugh.
Me and my wife came home and then we just... I'm going to admit it. We just sat here taking it in turns to cry. It was horrendous. We were just like, I just want him to come home. I'm so worried about him. But he's doing great now. But yeah, shout out. If anyone wants to give any money to any charities, give it to Muffin Pugs. Because it was supposed to be 100 quid. We paid our adoption fee, which is a donation to the charity. And then you get him neutered. But then the operation went up from £100 to £600. And they were just like, yeah, we'll just cover it. So even though we've got the dog, we've taken it from them, we've adopted him, they covered the whole amount. So if anyone's feeling generous and you're into dogs, look up Muffin Pugs, which is a UK charity, and chuck a few quid their way because they're awesome. And like, I can't say enough good things about them. Back onto punk and hardcore. Yes.
It's really sad when something happens to your dog. It's like, you know, they are a member of the family. Like, I mean, before we had the greyhound that we have now, we had our first greyhound ever. And one day I was, we'd had baby Gates put in the house because our son was had just been born and she was lying upstairs. And I went and closed one of the baby Gates and I closed it on her tail and heard this like horrible scream and she ran downstairs. And I'd accidentally closed the baby Gate on her tail and half her tail had to be amputated. And honestly, I felt awful for like weeks, like really.
I remember you were distraught, weren't you?
Yeah, I was really upset about it. It's like dogs are important, and it's sad when your dog has to go through something. But Dwight's fighting back. He looks like he's got more followers than us on Instagram, like four times more followers. So I can't feel too sorry for him.
Yeah. Go and check out. So
no, don't send our people their way. That's not fair. We've only got a few.
We can share some. It's fine. Look up Dwight Pinkhouse on Instagram. We've had him 3 months. He's already got 1,800 followers. And I think that's pretty much all organic.
We already lost four followers last week from posting stuff about Below Deck. So.
Oh, yeah.
But oh, well. We're going to pick up some this week, I think, because this is a quality episode. This is a really good one. I mean, all of them are really good, obviously, but that's down to our guests. And this week we've got a cracking guest.
Yeah, well, this came about really quick, this, didn't it? Because we were talking about bass players on our Instagram stories, and we mentioned Craig from Sick of It All, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And then somehow we slid into his DMs and started having a bit of a chat with him. And then the next thing we know, we've got him on the podcast. And I don't know, for a band that like has been a massive inspiration, I think, to us both, it was awesome to have him on. And
yeah, so we talked about a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, I think the first 20 minutes of the conversation, we basically talk about UK high street food outlets like Greg's and Nando's. And we talk about kind of him growing veg and lots of good stuff, music theory. He also puts on his self-referred tinfoil hat a couple of times, has some pretty different thoughts or interesting takes on some of the stuff happening in the world right now. But that was funny too, because there's a moment where the painting behind him actually lines up perfectly with the top of his head and actually gives him what looks like a tinfoil hat. But it was awesome to talk to him. I mean, to speak with a legend of the hardcore scene, you know, someone whose music we've both enjoyed for a really long time. Yeah, spot on.
Yeah, and for someone that was kind of lived through that whole scene in the 80s, and I think we mentioned CBGBs about 55 times, but for someone that was at CBGBs both as an artist and as a fan, like, he's got some interesting stories. Super cool guy. And cheers, Craig, for coming on. But we did have, we had a slight issue, didn't we? Which was so annoying, was that, I don't know what happened, but we obviously, with lockdown, we don't have access to our high-end multi-million pound recording studio, which we normally go into. So I've been doing it all from home. And for some reason, the audio captured from my microphone sounds like crap. So that was a bit frustrating, but I would just like to apologize to all our hardcore listeners. But I'm pretty sure that if you're listening, you're not listening to what I'm saying. You're going to listen to what Craig's saying. So,
yeah, no one's here for you or me, mate. I promise you that.
But do you know what else I thought? I thought if you think about like the early hardcore scene and the recordings that were coming out and the DIY music and stuff, it's all a little bit rough around the edges. So in a way, I was probably the most hardcore person in that conversation.
You've basically molded the aesthetic to the situation. So. Yeah.
This is a new hardcore movement. It's going to be just podcasting with really bad quality audio.
Mic-core.
Podcore.
Oh, dear. Right, on that, it's going downhill, so. Welcome to... No, that's how we start it. Right, this is episode 8 of Two of This Pit with Craig Ahead Satari from Sick of It All. Enjoy. Okay, welcome to episode 8 of Too Old for This Pit, and today we're super excited because we have a guest who doesn't really need an introduction, but has played a huge part in the hardcore music scene for 3 decades.
So today's guest has played in several influential bands over the years, most known for being one quarter of New York hardcore giant Sick of It All. We're joined today by bassist Craig Ahead Satari. So hello, Craig. How are you?
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. It's just before we started recording, we've just had a big in-depth conversation about guitar scales and Craig's top tips on bass.
I don't even play any instruments, so I have no idea what the last 10 minutes was about.
Yeah, it's like pandemic practice, you know, just brush up on all my technical stuff with the bass, you know what I mean?
I was going to say, is that I've been keeping busy in lockdown?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm doing my thing. I've been playing bass a lot, you know, like working on stuff that I don't really have time or incentive to work on when I was touring 6-8 months out of the year. My downtime, I want to put the instrument down mostly and do other things. But now that I have time, I'm working on, you know, musical stuff beyond hardcore, meaning like improving my ability as a bass player, generally speaking. You know what I mean? Not a lot of that really comes into the hardcore realm, you know, because, you know, the way hardcore is played. It's more about how you play than what you play almost.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always good to get better. You know what I mean? It's always good to get better a little bit if it might come out of songwriting or something like that. You know what I mean?
Do you find, well, touring for 6 to 8 months of the year, do you find your chops keep up just from that? Or do you find you get home, you need to keep practicing?
No, when I do that much, my hands hurt after a cycle of touring. My hands are kind of really, my knuckles get swollen. So I just need to stop playing for a while because it's like a lot of abuse on the hands and on the joints. The knees hurt, the back hurts. But, you know, that's what happens when you jump up and down your whole life and you play an instrument aggressively. And I've been doing this since I was a kid, basically. So, you know, it's a little wear and tear, but it's all right. You know, it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
So have you been in New York City while everything's been happening? Because I know New York City had it really bad for quite a while.
Yeah, I live in Queens, New York, but I also live in upstate New York. I have a farm 2 hours upstate. So when this thing started getting heavy, I went upstate and stayed up there because I have a bunch of land there and I can enjoy myself. I have more space so I can do stuff up there. Plus, when I'm always on tour, I only get to spend weekends up there, so I really enjoy being up there, you know, planting my garden, riding my motorcycle, going on hikes and stuff like that. So I got to do all of that, which is, it's nice. I finally got to spend some time with my farm more than just a few days at a time, you know?
Mm. That sounds pretty relaxed. Are you growing anything good at the moment? Any good veggies?
Well, you know, I did my garden and I did, tomatoes and, beans and a whole bunch of stuff. And, what happened was, a lot of the, there was a problem with the weeds and something went wrong with the garden a little bit. So I only wound up getting tomatoes, some greens, and some broccoli. So I'll get a lot of tomatoes this year and I'll get some nice broccoli and I'll have some salads. But as far as the beans and the cucumbers and zucchini, they didn't make it this year.
Oh, man. I think, to be honest, if me and Kieran tried to grow anything in our gardens, we'd have space for about 1.8 tomatoes between us, maybe.
Yeah, nothing like a homegrown tomato, but you know, you guys.
That's all you need, 1.8 a day. That's what they say.
Tomato's my favorite food on planet Earth, so there you go.
Is there something with rock musicians and having farms? Because we had Alan and Dan from 4 Years Strong on, didn't we, a few episodes back? And
yeah.
Alan was telling us about his Christmas tree farm that he has.
Oh, that's nice. I have a Christmas tree farm actually just down the road from me. You know, it's the fact that you're touring so extensively, you're living out of a car basically, you feel so displaced. That when you go home and you have land and you can reconnect with like just being on the earth and seeing things grow, it like kind of keeps you sane. Don't have to worry about that right now.
It must be quite a nice escape, I suppose, after the chaos of touring. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice escape. Absolutely. And I'm a motorcycle enthusiast, so I get to go up there and ride, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. Beautiful open roads to ride on and stuff like that, and nice fields. So, you know, I wouldn't dream of riding downstate. It's just too dangerous.
That sounds awesome. I'm pretty jealous now, to be fair. Sounds like and an ideal life.
You guys are English, and yes, I have a Triumph Tiger.
Oh, excellent. Yeah
Triumph, yeah, good bike. Go. Yeah, nice. English, you guys make a great bike. Make a nice cup of tea too. You ever make a nice cup of tea too?
Well, yeah. Actually, I get told off by my wife consistently that I don't make a good cup of tea.
What do you do? Really? What do you do wrong to it?
Apparently, it's too pale.
Oh man,
you too pale.
It's got to be strong. My wife's American, and she drinks builder's tea. She drinks the strong stuff.
Really?
Like just a little bit of milk, just a tiny little bit.
You probably schooled her. You know, you taught her what was what.
I think she taught me. I think she's more.
Really?
I think she's more English than I am now.
Should be ashamed of yourself, friend.
We went to when we went to last time to visit a family in South Carolina. We came home and I was like, "What's the first thing you wanna do?" And she was like, "I want to go to Greg's. Greg's is like an English chain of kind of fast food bakery style things. And they do pasties, which are basically just like pastry with fillings."
Yeah,
and she was
like,
I want one of those. And I was like, damn. I'm so pleased I married you.
cheese and onion. Yep. Cheese and onion pasty. Right. I know what's up.
There you go.
Yeah, find a British person that doesn't love Greggs. It's impossible.
Yeah. I mean, how many millions of times have I eaten at like a Nando's? That's like Nando's is a place like, you're on tour, going to Nando's. It's like, again? Come on. You know what I love? I don't eat meat. I'm a vegetarian, but those carveries You can get the vegetables and they have that vegan gravy. Ooh, those Carveries or something. That's a serious place to eat.
I keep telling, me and Kieran are actually both vegan. I keep telling Kieran, you need to get to Toby Carvery. They got some good stuff there.
Yeah, man, I've had some nice meals there where I'm like pretty satisfied.
I'm still waiting for an invite to come around and have a bit of your seitan brisket.
Seitan brisket sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I make seitan schnitzel when I come back from Germany. I'll make like a seitan schnitzel kind of thing. You know? Ooh, yeah. My mom's German. So she can whip all that stuff up beautifully.
Oh,
she's like, this is very good. Yes. I'm like, yeah, it's great.
How long have you been veggie for?
11 years about. I dabbled with it in the 80s. I was on and off for a long time, kind of played back and forth with it. And then when I turned 40, I looked like I'm not even going to like ever let it stray. And it's been 11 years solid.
Did you ever, I know like someone, we posted something the other day and I can't remember what we were talking about. I think it was just like an odd reference to something that was vegetarian or vegan. And someone said, do you think the type of music you listen to has influenced that? And obviously I know in the hardcore scene, there are obviously a lot of bands that are straight edge or just a lot of people who are vegetarian or vegan. It's people like John Joseph from Cro-Mags. There's that whole kind of thing, isn't there? Do you think that had any effect on you not eating meat?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was into the Cro-Mags as a kid, going to shows, so I knew their stance on that. And I joined Youth for Today in 1986, and they were vegetarian. So I just went with it and stuck with me for a few years. And, you know, then I played in Agnostic Front. And, you know, I just kind of like, you know, I kind of just lost that for a while. And eventually I went back to it. And the main reason I went back to it was because of spiritual philosophy, reading the Vedas, you know, and that was an influence from the Cro-Mags, because when I was in Youth mm-hmm. Today, they weren't really even, they were just discovering all that stuff. So to me, it's something that's like I was given this human birth, and that's a bit of a privilege. And I feel like to not be mindful of my position and just feed my senses totally would be irresponsible, and that I shouldn't squander this opportunity to sort of exercise discipline and put myself in a position where I'm doing things that I feel are proper and for the position I'm in and the other entities that are around me, rather than just satisfying my senses all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we don't talk about it much, do we? We're not like, this is a, first and foremost, this is just a music podcast. We don't kind of go into that too much, because I understand that not everyone's kind of into it, but you know, it's cool.
I'm not judging anyone. I'm just explaining it's not like I walk around like I'm the most aware guy on the planet. Not at all. I do silly things. You know, I get lazy and give in to sense pleasure. I'm far from perfect, but at least I'm trying to address certain things. Like I'm not looking to like, you know, harm an animal when I could eat something that I would like even more ultimately and don't have to do that harm. Yeah, you can say broccoli has feelings, and it does, but you know, how developed is the nervous system is another question. But we don't need to get into that. Let's talk about other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, actually New York is a great place to be in vegetarian. I'm vegan.
Yeah, absolutely.
I went on me and my wife went on a honeymoon to New York.
And, okay.
We stayed at a place called the Stewart Hotel, which was just opposite Madison Square Garden. You might know it. New York's a massive place. But anyway, we stayed there, and there was a bagel place across the road. And I think they had about four or five things on the menu that were vegan.
Nice.
And it was great. Like, just being able to, like...
Tofu cream cheese is nice.
Yeah,
it doesn't phlegm you up. It's really good.
Yeah, yeah. And it was great just to be able to walk out the hotel in the morning, go across the road and get some food, and not wake up in the morning and have to go on your phone and look, you know, get on Subway for half an hour to find something.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have a lot of nice vegetarian food in England. You know, you guys go from having the dirtiest food to having some really it's really like both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. No, I totally get you. What we've done is we've basically made veggie and vegan versions of the dirty food. So like the big thing at Greg's right now you can get vegan sausage roll, you can get vegan steak bake. Like, it's just like the terrible stuff. It's also
when you say those words, I feel like I can just feel the indigestion just coming on.
The bubble and squeak.
It's great. You can have a sausage roll and it's nice, you know, 30 seconds of, you know, enjoyment. 2 hours later, you're crippled in pain.
I mean, but at least you get the same genuine heart palpitations that the guys who eat meat get, right? I want the full experience.
That's true.
That's what it's about. I don't want the taste. I want the heart palpitations.
You know, you guys are self-aware English. I respect that.
Oh, man. We were just talking, actually, before I came on. We were talking about how good Sick of It All's merchandise is and all the great T-shirts you've had over the years. And about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I had that T-shirt. I don't know if you remember it. That was the had Sick of It All on the front, and it was in the font of the same kind of style writing as The Thing from Fantastic Four. And on the back it said, it's clobbering time.
I remember that. Yeah.
So I used to wear this shirt like all the time, and I was walking around on the street one day. And one of the great things about Sick of It All, obviously, is you kind of have that tradition that all the great punk and hardcore bands of having a very direct name. And I was walking down the street with this T-shirt on, and this old guy was like, I have my headphones in. This old guy's like tapping me. I take my headphones out. I'm like, yeah, you okay? And he's like, yeah, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'd like forgotten I was wearing this T-shirt. He was like, are you sure you're okay? I was like, I'm fine. He's like, you're not going to like give up on life? He's like, it's okay. Things will be okay. I was like, no, it's just a band. It's okay.
What a nice gentleman.
Yeah. He was genuinely concerned for my mental health, but I think that's a testament to how good the band name
that's
is.
That's good. I was sitting outside of a coffee shop the other day. Sometimes in the morning when I'm downstate, you know, down in Queens, I hang out with my brother-in-law's friends and we have coffee in the morning and, you know, just talk. So we're having coffee and I see this girl with a guy walking and she has a Discharge shirt on, right? Young girl.
Nice.
So I'm like, I forget what I said. I was like, Discharge, hear nothing, see nothing, say nothing. You know, I said something to her. She looked at me scared and her boyfriend looked at me and they were like scared. Like they thought I was like, I don't know. They didn't understand. I don't think the girl even knew who Discharge was, but she was wearing a shirt. And I was like, your shirt, I'm talking about the band. And she just gave me this look like, who are you? What are you like? Why are you talking to me? And it was weird. Yeah, I'm talking to you because you're like an 18-year-old kid wearing a Discharge shirt in 2020. That's exciting to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the kid just didn't get it. You know, I don't know what happened. Maybe they were just scared. Who's this old guy talking to me?
There was a big thing a few years back, wasn't there? About I don't know if you have Topshop over there.
Topshop. I don't know what that is.
Well, it's like it's just a high street clothing shop. But I think it was Topshop. They were selling Motorhead T-shirts and Slayer T-shirts. So there's a massive uproar about these people who are buying, you know, Motorhead and Slayer T-shirts that you see walking down the street and they didn't have a clue.
The Motorhead shirt. People don't even half the time know what the CB shirt is or the Motorhead shirt.
Oh, yeah, the CBGB, yeah.
As common as the classic Motorhead shirt is, it's like one of the greatest shirts of all time.
Yeah.
I seem to see tons of people wearing, like, Thrasher shirts. And I was like, there's no way you were into, like, skating in the 90s.
Yeah,
you're 13 years old.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those recently as well. And I'm just like, this person's not like a 70s skater.
Yeah.
But whatever. You know, whatever.
It's
whatever.
Fun. Yeah.
It's for the Ramones shirt, another one that everybody wears. Yeah. You know? I think almost everybody, I think, knows who the Ramones are.
And the Jack Daniel shirt as well. I mean, that's not as...
That's
a good one, isn't it? I think I've got one of them somewhere.
Yeah. Going back to kind of maybe not the 70s, because that was too long ago, but the 80s. Obviously back in New York in the 80s, there was the fair share of troubles that any big city has, but kind of more pronounced in New York in the 80s. Did you find the issues, the social issues around then that were happening, did they inspire you to pursue music, or was it just something that you kind of naturally fell into without that?
You know, I liked music as a kid. It was whatever my brother brought home. I was influenced by a friend my brother brought home, a guy named Danny Lilker, kind of got me going on the bass and punk rock and heavy metal, early heavy metal and stuff like that. So I was always drawn to it. I just luckily ran into some people that directed me toward the things that I wound up sticking with, you know, like the hardcore-ish type stuff. So, I mean, the 80s, it's like... You know, socially, there were things going on. You know, I was never a political activist, but my mother is a very intelligent woman, and socially and politically, she understood what was going on, and she would explain things to me. You know, an issue would happen, something would be on the news. She'd go, "Craig, what do you think that is?" And I, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." She goes, "That's what they're saying, but do you know the history of it?" And she would explain, "Yeah, read this." So I learned quite a bit about the background of what was occurring when I was a teenager and when I was a kid. So, and hardcore and punk was all about that. So it sort of just worked out well for me. Like when I found like new wave of British heavy metal music, like when I was a kid in like 81 or whatever, I liked it and I loved the power of the music and I liked the songs were enjoyable, but it didn't really say that much. But then once I found like hardcore and punk, I was like, oh, these guys are talking about something I could get down with. And I just was drawn to it more because it was something I sort of enjoyed, digging into mentally and musically.
Yeah. I think, like, obviously, as an English person, as a British person, New York has always been kind of, you know, this huge kind of proud, kind of prominent city. But there was two things that I saw in the last year that, and I never kind of understood what New York was like at that time. One of them was a documentary on Netflix called Hip Hop Evolution, which was all about the rise of kind of New York hip hop in the 80s and how punk played a part in that too. And
very similar, very similar movements, parallel movements, different, but had a lot of similarities, and there was some unity there as well back then.
Yeah. And the other one was John Joseph in his book, just talking about what New York was like when he was kind of growing up out of foster care on the streets in New York. And it just sounds like The Warriors, but like real life. It sounds terrifying.
what a great book, huh? How great is his book? That first book, that evolution book, he gave me a typed out printed copy before it came out to read. He was like, "Read this, tell me what you think." And I just like, I seriously spent like days and days just reading that nonstop. And it was like so much longer because I had like the long version. It's such a good book. I mean, you want to know about New York back then? Read that book, Evolution of a Cro-Magnon. Yeah. That's it.
Well, that's what I mean. Kind of when we think of New York, I think a lot of people who don't understand the history, myself included, just think, oh, it's the Empire State Building. It's 30 Rock. It's kind of this big, rich city. Yeah, and it's obviously had a lot of problems, and I didn't know how much of that kind of influenced Sick of It All in the early days.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of influence, the things you see going on around you. You know how that goes. It's a strange, and back then you thought you had it bad, but if you look at what's going on today, I mean, those are the golden days when it really comes down to it. I mean, I remember being a kid in the 70s were really a banged up time. Crime was everywhere. Like, neighborhoods were destroyed. I mean, the 70s were a really bad time. I feel like we're going back to the 70s now, but in a different way, because at least in the 70s, things were really downtrodden and economically things were terrible. But people had the ability to go where they wanted and do what they wanted. Now I feel like America's not even America anymore. And I think the coup, the hijacking has finally, become apparent. And it's literally like you can't go anywhere or do anything. I feel like the America I knew, the place that was a beacon of light in the world to a degree, at least on paper it was, no longer exists. We're going into a dark, dark period of manipulation.
Yeah.
Basically, we're going into slavery through political maneuvering around the things that are occurring. Anything that happens in the modern times, they have a scam ready to jump on it and politicize it and take away the people's freedoms based around whatever happens, you know what I mean? And I really feel like people need to wake up to this, because the world we knew and loved so much is basically gone unless people do something about what's happening.
Yeah.
Do you think obviously there was a lot of these social problems, do you think that's what made hardcore so appealing back in the early days? Obviously hardcore is about being true to yourself. It's not necessarily about being the the most skilled guitarist or the best singer. It's about honesty and just, do you think that that was what drove people to that scene?
Well, yeah, it was street music. It was real life. You know, people could relate. It was, you know, it was so much.
The scene would have developed the same if it wasn't for those issues. Do you think it would be?
No, I don't. I think those issues are what pushed it. It was like just kids looking for a voice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it was like the one of the last great youth movements. So I really feel like I'm happy to have been a part of such a player in this, because I feel like it's very important. And a lot of those lessons from the earlier hardcore days are lessons that should be applied today.
Yeah.
Considering how far we're getting from our freedoms.
Do you think the DIY ethos still exists, or is it easier or harder nowadays? Because obviously, you know, we've got Spotify, we've got streaming, you know, you can write a song in your bedroom and have it online the next day. So technically that is kind of DIY, but, you know, do you think it's easier or harder for bands now in that sense?
I think it's kind of, it's easier for the average guy to write a song and put it out. But as far as a touring band, yeah, a band to go out and like play like that, it's more difficult because everything's so flooded.
Yeah.
And you can just go on your computer and look at stuff instead of going out to a show.
I was just going to say, do you keep up with what's around at the moment? Is it something that do you keep an active eye on what's happening in punk and hardcore right now? Or is it something that you just focus on your projects and kind of let people do what they do?
I mainly, what I see is what I see when I'm out on the road.
Yeah.
So I pick up on bands by playing with them and seeing them live. I have a few friends that send me, hey, check out this new band, check out that new band. And I'm honestly a little critical because a lot of the stuff I'm hearing, I'm like, all right, that's okay, but how come they're not doing this here? How come it's always the same like this? You know what I mean? So yeah, I feel like sometimes, but I've also been playing music my whole life. So I look like, oh man, they should have did this right there. Oh, wait a minute. How come that's not the chorus? You know what I mean? Like weird stuff like that. But you know, some of the stuff I pick up on, I like, but I feel like nobody really took it to nobody really expanded on it and took it anywhere else unless they went outside of it. You know, I mean, you had bands like Quicksand back in the day, for example, that took like the hardcore sound and developed a post sound out of it, which was a cool spot to be in. You know what I mean? But as far as straight up hardcore, I'm not hearing anything that's really blowing me away. Although I do hear some good bands from time to time.
I do feel like it's your job though, to kind of, every generation has to criticize the newer generation. That's part of it. Like you've been
in the game long enough to be able to be in a position absolutely to do that, I think, as well.
Yeah,
you know what it is like. I like stuff to be raw and aggressive, but I also like it to like people to be able to put together a song, take some simple ingredients and make something nice out of it. I want to hear the song drive. I want to hear it break down. I want to hear something that's memorable. You know what I mean? Sometimes people aren't good enough at their instruments or their understanding of crafting music that you look like these guys have the right idea, but they don't have the actual musical depth or skill to pull off what they're trying to do to the most effective level. You know what I mean?
I'm just going to say, there's quite a lot of kind of, there's a lot of bands at the moment who kind of take older sounding music or genres that have been around a long time and kind of, you know, try and do something slightly new with them. I know, and often get a lot of criticism. So bands like, I suppose, Def Heaven, who took black metal and kind of turned it into their own thing, but they didn't wear the makeup. And then there's bands like Turnstile. Obviously, a lot of people like their kind of hardcore sound, but there's still as many people who are like, that's not really hardcore. But
they're an example of a band that kind of like switched it up and kind of did their own thing. So they kind of like they have hardcore elements, but they did their own thing. So yeah, that actually is a good example of a band that sort of took it and put their own twist on it. And you know, so that is a good example of a band that is hardcore-like and also is original.
I found a good quote on your website from Armin that was, aging seems to work well with our message as opposed to a good time band who sings about partying all night. There are so many horrible aspects of the world that become more obvious to us year after year, which we didn't see or understand before, which fuel our frustration every day. So obviously, you're still, all of you are very passionate. You've still got messages to your songs. Obviously, Sick of It All is not going to come up with a power ballad or anytime soon, but do you feel pressure to...
Well, actually, Bull's Anthem was our power ballad. What are you talking about? That's our power ballad.
Yeah, that's your big moment. Do you feel pressure to be consistent across albums, or is it quite natural when you come to writing an album? Or because, I mean, you've obviously been doing it long enough now that you probably could do whatever you wanted, you know, in that sense. But do you feel there's a pressure to keep consistency across all your albums?
Not really. We just sort of do what we do. We always wrote songs the same way. Like, we were talking before we started recording, we were talking about music theory and like playing as a musician as opposed to a hardcore musician. Mm. And none of that really comes into play when we write. We just sort of write in the same way we did when we were teenagers. Yeah. You feel it, it comes out of you, and you craft it according to what's going to come across inspirationally and energetic, or maybe dark and disturbing, depending on the mood of what song you're putting together and how you feel, how that particular number is coming together. But we don't really feel too much pressure. I guess when an album's done, I look like, oh, how does this stack up? Or when we're finishing up a project, oh, how does this stack up? How does this work? You want to make sure you have very memorable songs. You know what I mean? Yeah. So sometimes I feel like, oh, like, you know, here are three songs. They're okay. But where's the real stuff that's going to stick in your head? You know what I mean? And it's not even like catchy. It's just a matter of you want to be able to have that chorus. You know, I think about the 80s pileup where everyone piled on the mic and the singer in the front of the stage at CB's. And to me, it's always like, yo, we need more pileups. We need more sing-alongs. But they're not really pretty sing-alongs. It's just that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got Karl Marsh diving back and forth over the crowd while everyone's piled up kind of thing. It's like, I could just see it in my head. You know what I mean? Yeah. What Armand was saying about, topically, we have things to be disturbed about. I mean, just look at the world we live in. Look at the manipulations that are occurring right now and have occurred. I mean, you know, I recently have had a few people say, oh, you're a tinfoil hat guy. I like your band, but you're conspiracy theorists. Really? What, just because you question the official narrative of things that are obviously not what they're portrayed to be, and there's hidden agendas all over the place? I mean, if people get offended by that and they want to, one guy told me, oh, I'll burn your records. Go ahead and burn them. You don't question authority, you're not a punk rocker. Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely. I mean, the day that you become old enough to understand that a war isn't two leaders of two countries getting pissed at each other and having a fight, you realize that it's a business meeting that occurred long before this war ever was kicked off. Mm. It's a business meeting in a boardroom where business people are discussing how they're going to divvy up the profits of this situation that they're going to manufacture, create, and then push on the public. The day you realize that a war is a business exchange and it was planned in advance is the day you realize that all this stuff is, or most of this stuff is absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
And that the world we live in, you're sold an explanation for the things that happened, and very rarely is that explanation the real thing that's going on.
I mean, obviously it comes across quite a lot in the live shows as well. We've seen you quite a few times. I think I first saw you guys in 2004, I think. We saw you on the 30th anniversary tour.
Okay.
What I mean, is it hard to keep that level of energy up, you know, nearly 30 years on? Or do you find
you guys don't want to talk about that, the kind of stuff I was just talking about. I gotcha.
No, we're open to it. I'm just saying, you know, obviously.
Yeah, no, we're not changing topic.
Yeah, no, because obviously, there is a lot of issues going on in the world, and that is something that influences the music. So, do you find that kind of anger translates to playing live?
As far as energy in a live performance, it's natural to us. Growing up at CBs, seeing shows, we come from a place where, you know, a show is get charged up and let it all out. So it's natural for us to put on a strong performance. Mm. So even when, you know, you're 3 weeks deep into a tour and your bones are hurting, you're still, your reaction to play isn't to sit down or get mellow, it's to go off. Yeah. So it's just a natural thing. You know, with all the touring we do, you get a little tired sometimes, but you always feel that adrenaline rush. You know what I mean? That's just the way we play, you know? Mm. It's been a little minute, though. We haven't played anything. We haven't played anything. Mid-December was the last show we did. And who knows when the next show is going to be with all this stuff going on.
We probably saw you on one of the last shows because we caught you in Sheffield with Comeback Kid and Cancer Bats.
Okay, where was that? What show was that?
Sheffield. Which
Sheffield. Okay.
Yeah, there was a bit of an incident afterwards.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I don't know the full story, but I had heard
I was taking a shower, and there was some kind of problem. My roadie had some kind of an altercation with a bunch of guys, and they tried to beat him up or something. I was in the shower at the time. I missed the whole thing, basically. All I know is in the end, it was just that's like, you know, that wasn't – there a lot of complaints about that place, and they weren't very professional, so whatever.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah, I've heard a really few kind of horror stories about that venue. I think it was something with set time or something. I don't know, but that was a great show. Well, actually, it was a great show, but I was quite ill. So we came up from Manchester, about six of us. We booked an apartment there to stay overnight. And we were going to have this big night out. You know, we're super psyched for this gig. Oh, it's probably one of the best lineups in terms of a gig that I've ever seen.
The gig itself was fun, and everybody was super, awesome. Super, like during the day, nobody was rude. The club was all, to me, everyone in the club was super cool. And I just, that's why after I got out of the shower and I was getting ready to go back to the bus and like get ready for the end of the night, I was like, what happened? And everyone was all calm. They're like, oh, it's no big deal, nothing. So, but supposedly it was more than they made it out to be, I guess. I don't know. Bottom line, we're not going to play that club again, and who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a place to play if it's going to be a situation like that. That's
well, great. Graham has quite a rock and roll story about the after party, don't you?
Well, you
getting the best night's sleep of your life.
Oh, so basically, I have a 3-year-old who gets up every morning. He's like the 3-year-old definition of hardcore. He's just like turning a light switch on at 5 a.m, like ready to go. My wife was very kind and looked after him that night, and we drove up to Sheffield and we were like, gonna have a big night out, like obviously you're gonna see Cancer Bass, Sick of It All, Comeback Kid, it's gonna be amazing. And obviously the show was, and it was, you know, everything we wanted it to be. And then I think afterwards you weren't feeling very well, Kieran, and I was just
I've been ill for about a week before, so I was on the way up. I was determined to have like a big night, but then I can't remember. I had about 4 or 5 beers, and then by the end of it, I was like, I need to go and lie down in a cold room.
And then I was up for like 18 hours. And
an Englishman down by 4 or 5 beers? What?
I know.
Add a zero.
Wait, we'll go back. We'll edit this. I'll bump that up to maybe 12 or 15 beers.
Yeah, 15 at least.
Yeah, God, at least 20. Come on.
Yeah.
But not only was that like a great show and just an awesome live experience, I got 8 hours sleep that night, and
oh boy,
I felt invincible the next day. I was like, this is what normal people feel like. I was still on the adrenaline rush of seeing Sick of It All. I was still kind of and I'd had 8 hours of sleep. It was a pivotal moment in my life, basically.
The old days of being on tour in a van and like, okay, we have to drive, like get a few hours sleep, you're driving next. Like those AF tours I did in the 80s, it was like, you know, everyone take turns driving, we're driving overnight, like in a van in America, you know, it was like forever. Same with Europe too. It would be like these European drives back when we'd go in vans, it was just like endless driving and no sleep. When you're sitting in like one of those Tiger vans where you're almost leaned forward as opposed to even being able to like stretch back, you're almost like the seats almost come forward. You know what I mean? Oh, tough stuff, man. No sleep, barely any food. You can't pee because you're in a van. That's just the worst. But it's the best. You know what I mean?
Is there a place that you kind of look forward to playing in Europe, or a city or a country? Obviously, with you having German heritage, I'm sure that's pretty special when you play Germany. But is there anywhere else that kind of stands out?
I just like playing, and now that we haven't played in over 6 months, you know, places where the shows are good, the towns are nice, and the people are friendly. So Germany stands out as one. A lot of spots in England are really enjoyable to play. Anywhere. Europe is probably my favorite place. If I had to pick a general area to play, it would be Europe. You know, I love going to South America as well, and anywhere. I mean, we rarely go to Japan anymore, but I've always had fun there. I just love to play. I love traveling. It's like when, you know, this got taken away from us recently. And when it looks like I have a party hat on, right? Doesn't it look like I have a party hat on?
It does look a bit like you. Yeah, just for the listeners, there's a picture behind Craig.
Yeah, and the corner of it looks like I have a party hat on. So and as far as playing, I really like just now that we haven't played in a while, it's like all I want to do is just play shows and travel the world and just be out with my friends enjoying life, you know? Will it come back? We'll see.
Yeah, well, we kind of only started this podcast really when lockdown had just happened, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's obviously it's affected everyone.
It doesn't seem like it's going away, does it? It doesn't seem like they're looking like, no, you have to wear a mask. You can't go in here. People can't gather. It's like, you know, you watch the news. They're telling you, oh, this many people here. Yeah. And when's it going to end? When is this ever going to? I don't think they're going to put this away. I think it's going to be like a. I think they're going to use this to parlay this into enslavement of humanity, and take you can run away with that statement and call me a tinfoil hat guy, but in reality, it's just a matter of we're being played very badly. And yes, there is something. There was a virus. There still, I guess, is to some small degree a virus that can make you sick, but you know, people die, and this is life, and they're really running away with this thing. And the world, I fear, will never be the same. And we'll lose all of our freedoms across the world if we don't question what's going on, you know? And it's been, you know, 6 months or whatever. It's getting on for a while. If in 2 years people are like, still, you can't go anywhere. You have to wear a mask. Come on. Let's not get our freedoms completely stripped from us that easily is my point.
It's definitely, I don't know what it's been the same over there, but it's been really tough for a lot of the live venues here. We've had a lot of them shutting down in Manchester. It was only a couple of weeks ago, I think they announced that there was going to be a massive fund put together, you know, to help these venues. But it did kind of feel like the kind of live music just got left by the wayside over here. I don't know what this is in America.
Well, that's similar. That's the voice that would speak out against this. They don't want anyone speaking out against this. Everybody's got to fall into lockstep, you know? This is like, I feel like this is Germany between the burning of the Reichstag building and the full declaration of war across Europe of the Nazis. You know, it's like we're like in that transitional period right when it's pretty much too late to do anything about it. And it's pretty disheartening to see what's happening, you know? And when I say the burning of the Reichstag building, I'm talking about the Patriot Act that followed 9/11, just to be specific about how I'm wording these things.
But when things, hopefully, I mean, I don't know when it'll be, but when things do get better, what song are you just looking forward to just picking up that bass and kind of belting out there? Is there one that you always look forward to the most every time?
It would just be a whole set. It would be the whole thing of meeting these guys at the airport, us all making fun of each other, getting on a plane and landing somewhere. You know, I'm sleeping in my bunk, trying to get over the jet lag. My roadie's being loud and I'm yelling at him to shut up. And, you know, it's just all the stuff that you think annoys you that you just look like, oh, I wish that was happening right now.
When it comes to putting a live set together, I mean, obviously, I don't even know how many songs you have in total, you know, to pick for a live set.
For a live set, we have 30 songs. We might have 300 songs in our catalog, but there are only 30.
So you have 30 to choose from. Yeah.
Well,
do you get tired of playing certain songs? Because I know, like, Take the Night Off, for example. I know that was an opener in your set for a long time, and you know, when that plays, that's like it just goes off.
The way it works is, I'm the guy that says, "Let's flip the set on its head. Let's open with a song we never opened with before. Let's play two songs we never played." And then you have Armand, who is the guy who says, no, same set, same way. It's familiar. It's comfortable. So he's into having a familiar set that doesn't vary much at all. Whereas I'm the complete opposite. And Pete doesn't care. Pete's just like, I know better than to get involved in this old standoff. So that's smart on his part. And and Lou sort of is in between, you know what I mean? Lou's sort of in between.
Because we tagged you in an Instagram post and we had the intro from Maladjusted playing. Do you ever play Maladjusted live?
Not very often.
I've never seen that, but
we've done it live, not probably in a few years, but it would get pulled out once in a while. I wouldn't mind doing that again if we wind up playing.
Yeah.
You know, when I say if, it's because, you know, who knows if they're going to allow music anymore in a live format. They being the people that are, you know, I don't mean to sound all negative on it, but I just, you know, it's, I won't get into it because I don't want to redirect this in a different way. I just feel like the world we grew up in is, oh, I think I have a green mohawk, don't I?
Yeah. Tinfoil hat.
It's pretty good. It's just my tinfoil. That's my green tinfoil hat. Yeah.
Is there any songs that you like consciously choose not to play live? Is there anything that maybe you used to and you don't anymore, or certain songs that you like?
A lot of the songs that are experimental, we wouldn't play live, like right. Return to Reality and stuff like that. So some of these more experimental songs we wouldn't play live because they're not energetic. Certain singy songs we won't play because we usually pick a few of them and play them.
Right.
Like there are a lot of songs that I would like to play that don't, but it's, you know, that being said, you got to be able to just get up and do it. You know what I mean? And for me, it's kind of easier maybe than for Armand because he's a drummer and he has to work out his drumming on some of these songs. So it might be harder for him to just pull stuff, as we say, out of his ass. You know what I mean? For me, I just know all these songs at the back of my hand. It's not a problem. But I guess if you're a drummer, you know, if you have to coordinate your arms and legs, you know, you might have to practice it a few times.
Is there, obviously, as you say, you've got a huge catalog of songs. Is there any album that you have? Is there an album that you have the fondest memories of recording, of touring? Is there one that stands out?
It's really hard to say. They're all kind of their own thing. I'll say Scratch the Surface was really fun to record, you know, a lot going on at that time. I have some good and bad memories of that era of my life. That Built to Last album was really fun because we were out in California and we were staying at a place. And that's actually where Armand met his wife that he has some children with now. So for him, I'm sure that's a very fond album, you know, and it was a really nice time. We all had fun. We all became, you know, like his wife and her friends all hung out. So that was like a pretty fun time. You know, every album's got its own thing going on. Even the recent one we did with working with Jerry Farley, Jerry's our friend. So there's a lot of laughs that go along with that. So, you know, every album's its own thing. And yeah, it all works out pretty well. Like that Life on the Ropes album is one where I think back is a little strange to me just because at the time I was going through some stuff and I was drinking a lot and getting high. So to me, that one's a little cloudy. You know, that was right before I stopped drinking and doing all of that. You know what I mean? Not that I had not that I was like a bad drug addict or alcoholic or anything like that. It was just, you know, a time where I was being sloppy, so the memories aren't as sharp of that album.
But you re-recorded Scratch the Surface for 2011, I think it was.
Yeah, we did a bunch of outtakes.
What was the reason for re-recording? Was there like a specific reason?
We were touring and we were going through Denmark, and two of Madsen, who's our engineer, you know, he's like the guy that mixes our albums and produces, is a producer often and always the mixer at the very least. And we were going through Denmark and we had some time off. So we were like, yeah, let's just do this. So we recorded all these songs. We came up with a list of songs and we just recorded them basically like live in Tua's studio. And we're very comfortable working with Tua. So, you know, when I say live, it wasn't fully live, but it was like, you know, Armand and me and Pete playing till Armand gets a good drum track. Hey, let me just patch in this one bass spot there. It just was very natural. You know what I mean? It had a very natural feel to it. And I think that's one of the better sounding recordings we did. And the reason I think it's so good sounding is because we didn't overanalyze it. With hardcore, it's not supposed to be perfect. It's supposed to have a certain energy and feel. So that one, you know, seemed to really be natural.
Yeah, true. I think you mixed, what album was it? Black Dahlia Murder? We were talking about that in one of the other episodes. I think you mixed that album.
Yeah. What was the last Black Dahlia Murder album, whatever it's, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, great. Yeah, because we were talking about Death to Pirates, weren't we? We were talking about the mix on that.
Yeah, he's nasty. He knows his stuff, you know what I mean? With us, you know, we do little tweaks between albums. Like a lot of times I'll say like, hey, you know, the drums are too booming. It covers up some of the dynamics. It's just little things. It's not big things, you know, hey, like, you know, scale the toms and the kick drum back a little, so there's a little more room for everything else to growl. But it's usually just simple things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to really tell them what to do. You can just tell them, hey, since the last one was like this, maybe we can have it a little more like this on this one, so it, you know, squeezes out a little differently.
Are you quite kind of keen to reduce the risk of an album being overproduced? Because I know the last album, Wake the Sleeping Dragon, was made in 2.5 weeks, I think.
It was made pretty fast, yeah.
Is that something you consciously want to do to kind of make sure you don't overthink it and tweak it too much?
Well, having time to have your stuff together is great, but sometimes it can work against you. Like the last album, we didn't even have stuff finished, and we were like, how are we going to do this? And it came out to be, I think, probably our best album ever. And just because it all fell together. And that's because us working in that way where we just put it together and go off the gut seems to really work well for us. That being said, you know, that can backfire also, because lyrically, if you don't have the lyrics together and Lou doesn't have his vocal lines down, that can be a problem, because, you know, you got to sing these songs a lot to get a feel for them. Otherwise, you can come out with some less than perfect performances. It's like all these songs we write, we go on tour and the song changes. Within the first 2 years, the song sounds way better because, like, on the bass, I'll throw in 5 more notes here and there I didn't realize. You know, we'll change little things. So you need enough time to develop the song, but you also don't want to try to finalize too hard. Yeah, you could try to finalize, like, in a hurry. That finalization process happens by it marinating on tour and you actually playing it as a band over and over again.
Yeah.
Did I say marinating process, or did I say marinization? I hope I didn't say marinization. What is that? Maybe I was just thinking it.
It sounds like a real word. Let's go with it. The marinization of
it's, yeah, an English word. Yeah.
We started doing this thing on Instagram. We only started doing it like yesterday, called Shameless Sunday. So one of the things that me and Kieran always talk about is, you know, I mean, we love hardcore, we love punk, we love metal, but we love a lot of other kind of music as well.
And yeah, sure.
We've kind of both got like a soft spot for, I don't know, some stuff that I think there's this whole thing in the genres that we like.
Are you going to name drop Kelly Clarkson for the third episode in a row?
Spill the beans. Spill the beans. Don't hide it. Come on.
I think there's this whole thing in the genres that we enjoy that you need to be 100% dedicated to them. Like, if you're a metalhead, you can't be listening to anything else. If you're into hardcore,
well, not really, but I know what you mean. You got to be down.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Be down. What you listen to behind closed doors is fine. What you listen to on Facebook is something different.
Yeah, but we noticed this thing on with previous guests where we had Gordon from the UK metal band Raging Speedhorn, and he was talking about how he enjoys the odd metal album, but he loves, like, when they go on tour, 80s pop is what they're always blasting on the tour bus. Is there anything that you listen to outside of hardcore that people might be like,
I listen to everything. I love Motown, old R&B. I love Motown. I listen to Motown all the time because it calms me down. So I'll listen to the Four Tops or whatever. You know, all those old...
I was literally about to say, do you like the Four Tops? Because I was listening to them yesterday. I'll Be There. What a great song.
Yes, I love the Four Tops. all of that old Motown, I love it because it's so sensible. It's the way it's written is so just well, it's so well put together. And James Jamerson, the bass player for the Funk Brothers, who was the center of the group, is the greatest bass player that's ever lived. And right there, you see what a bass player is to a band. He was the center of the Funk Brothers. Everything, including the vocals and everything, spawned from his bass lines. So, yes, bass rules, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
There is something immensely satisfying about Motown, though, isn't there? There's that warmth in the recording and that kind of, it's like a perfect puzzle. Like the jigsaw pieces just fit so tightly.
The bass is what puts that puzzle together.
The best is, though, I think you need to listen to it on vinyl. If you listen to the remastered versions, you don't get the crackle and the fuzz, do you?
You want the crackle and the fuzz, yeah.
Yeah, there's something about that. I don't know about what it is about Motown, but that just adds
If you guys could see my face, you guys, I mean, these guys see that I'm smirking talking about bass like that. I'm like, I'm just, you know, I'm just having fun with it. But in reality, like, you listen to Motown, the musicianship is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything's right. Everything's proper, you know. In hardcore, I do a run, I do a fill. I have a lot of different ways that I can go with it. It doesn't have to be the exact note at the exact time. I can do a lot of things to give it a feel, this type of feel, that type of feel. But with Motown, you're not only giving it a feel, but you got to land every note on the exact note it needs to be while still doing your own individual thing with it. The level of musicianship in that is insane.
Yeah. That's crazy that you mentioned the Four Tops, because I literally listened to them last night while cooking dinner.
Great, great band.
Yeah, great band, yeah. Sorry, Greg.
I love Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, we had him on the car today. Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were going to say we had him on last week. I was like, no, we didn't.
I was going to say, really? I'm going to listen to that.
Yeah, yeah. Stevie Wonder and Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think it's an important thing. Like, people need to realize, you know, we had, so last week we had Dan Nightingale, who's the frontman for a UK band called Conjurer, who kind of, they are intense, like really intense. Their debut album is, I don't know, it's crazy. It's a journey. But he was talking about, we got some questions on Instagram, and one of them was, are you serious about Carly Rae Jepsen, the pop singer? And he was like, yeah, 100%. Like, the whole band went and saw her last year. We're massive fans. And I think it's this thing that, like, I think a lot of people sometimes assume that because you like one type of music, you automatically exclude every other kind of music. Like,
you when you're 14, you might, but not as an adult. Yeah, as a kid, you're like, I'm so hardcore, I hate this. Like, no, not really. I mean, maybe when you're like 14, but when you're grown, when you, you know, you mature a little bit, it's all, your music is to be enjoyed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's the, was it Vision, Closed Minded, that song? If it's not punk rock, I'm never gonna like it. That's what I think of all the time when I was like 15, and that's, I kind of committed myself to one type of music.
There you go.
We've mentioned CBGBs a few times, but I want to know, you must have some cool early memories of CBGBs.
Yeah,
you guys played one of the last hardcore shows that they had on there.
I think it was the second to the last show. The Bad Brains, I believe, played the last show. I think we played the second or third to the last show.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So I started going to CBs in like 1984, and once I went, I was there every show pretty much, and it was a great place. It's like, at the time, it's normal, but you look back and you think, wow, that was like such a special era, and I was so lucky to have discovered that. You know, I mean, there was so much going on, and it was like the start of this great thing. And when I think about it from the perspective of what's happening today, it actually makes me sad. My heart just dropped thinking about the fact that, you know, this thing is that we have, this thing of ours, as we like to say it, is in jeopardy because of, you know, you have to wear a mask and you're never allowed out of your house again, kind of thing. So when I think about that, I think about the last, you know, basically almost 40 years of my life, and I've 100% dedicated my life to something, and now it's jeopardized. So, you know, it's kind of a little scary to me, to be honest.
You must have seen some great gigs there back in the day.
Yeah, I've seen so many good shows. I've seen so many bands play there, like, you know, Agnostic Front, Victim in Pain record release. A show. I've seen a million shows there, and I've played so many shows there. It's just really, really a great place. Like, if I look at, you know, they have that, they sell those CBGBs memorabilia things, and they have that shower curtain. When I look at the shower curtain, I can't say this for sure, but I'm pretty sure that I have the most bands that I played in on the shower curtain more than anybody else. I look at that shower curtain and I can see like all of these shows and these different bands I was in. And I'm like, I played that show. I was in that band for that show. And I point to the shower curtain. I'm just like, wow, that's kind of crazy. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
I'm kind of proud of that. I look like, yeah, I'm on the shower curtain. Yeah. Probably more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a legendary venue. I mean, even people I've obviously never been, but it's legendary. I mean, I watched the Bad Brains 1982. Set from CBGBs all the time, and it's still like, I don't know, one of the best live
intense
shows. I so wish I was there. And I know there was a lot of people there who decided to form bands after that, but that show is like, wow, it's something else.
I think Blondie were the last band to play there.
Blondie? What? I thought it was I thought that Bad Brain show was the last show.
Was that the last hardcore show? I'm sure.
Last regular show. Maybe it was Blondie. I don't know.
Bad Brains supported Blondie.
I love the Bad. I was at the Bad Brains show. They didn't support Blondie, but man, do I love the Bad Brains! What a great band.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to going back to when we came out there on our honeymoon. I wanted to go and see it because I thought maybe there was something there. I don't know. I thought there'd be something there kind of to remember it, but I think it's just all completely
not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. It's not. I got crazy stories from that place. All the homeless rioting.
Yeah.
Above in like the little homeless shelter and throwing garbage at people and all kinds of stuff happened, you know?
Just going back to kind of the last album, Bull's Anthem, you talked about that earlier. That's kind of the sick of it all ballad.
Obviously rally song more than ballad, you know?
Yeah, it is a rally song. It's a battle cry, isn't it? the Bull's Anthem, the video where fans get to submit their own footage. When you guys do come back to touring, how do you think touring will be changed? I mean, when we do get back to whatever normality we have.
I'm just wondering how it's going to be. They'll probably only have fill venues, which means you'll have to play much bigger places that cost much more. So you'll make a lot less money. I don't know if they'll allow people to dance and sing along. It'll probably be a lot more sterile. Who knows what the travel restrictions will be? Will there be a mandatory vaccine that you have to take? Like, for example, that somebody like Bill Gates, a guy that sells computers, is giving to you, a medical vaccine. You got a guy that makes computers giving it to you. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of weird stuff that's probably going to go behind this that doesn't make sense. And the only way it makes sense is that, look at that haircut I got with this green thing behind me. It's crazy. So it's probably not going to make a lot of sense. It's stuff that I'm a little, concerned with. It's not like I'm going to take some unproven vaccine just because some guy that sold computers tells me I have to because he's a billionaire. And, so we got to see what happens, what they try to. My only real hope is that after the election in America that they calm down with this to some degree. It could be that, after the election, things with the whole viral thing slow down. Who knows, but it's none of this is by accident. None of this is by chance. This is all, I'm not saying it started out that way. I'm saying it's become politicized. And once that happens, you got to be real careful where it gets taken.
You think, obviously, this is real, but people might be using it to their own advantage, to their own agenda.
100%. Yes, I think it's being exploited, tremendously exploited. And if you know, if you have any experience looking into like the things that preceded this, this was on the table before it happened. This was just like 9/11 was a paper written by a think tank, which was called Project for a New American Century. This whole ID 2020 thing and the plandemic thing was on the table before this happened. Funny how all of these major world events are written about, planned out, and then happen, and they say, oh, it's just a coincidence. Actually, they don't even say that. They just don't say anything at all. And they count on the fact that almost everybody doesn't know about it. And then the people that do know about it, they use that CIA term, conspiracy theorist, to invalidate them actually having knowledge of these things before they occur. So, take that as you want it. You can say I'm a tinfoil hat guy. I just call myself an informed citizen of the world.
Just to close it out, obviously sick of it all, you've had a career that spanned, you've been active in four different decades. Aside from the ways that people consume music now, which we talked about earlier, how do you think the hardcore scene has changed over time?
It hasn't actually changed much. It was always a live type of music scene. It's still a live type of music scene. you prove yourself on the stage in front of people performing live. So it hasn't changed much in that regard. I just think like society, it's become less about critical thinking and questioning authority and more about going with the trend in general, follow the leader type mentality as opposed to being against the grain. So I think it's gotten watered down to a degree, but that's what happens when something's been around that long and it gets exposed to more and more people. So it's the natural order of things. And, ultimately still when it comes down to it, a hardcore band live is where you see what they're about. So that hasn't really changed over the years. What have you done for me lately? What can you put out when you step on that stage? That's what it comes down to.
Definitely. I think, Sick of It All, I think are one of the kind of few bands that sound great on a record, but live is what it's all about. You know, there's so much energy, so much passion. It's great. You know, going back to Sheffield, for example, I mean, that was like such a buzz in that room.
Yeah, I mean, I miss that. I can't wait to step on stage again. It's like I'm starting to get really antsy. I just want to be who I just want to do what I do. You know what I mean? This is not natural for me. I'm a performer. You know what I mean? I want to get up there and perform. This is what I've done my whole life. I miss it a lot, and I can't wait to get back to it.
Well, when the time comes, we're super excited to see you again. I'm sure.
Yeah, come out to the show. We'll hang out.
We'll go
to Nando's and get something to eat.
Yeah, man. Let's. I'll tell you what. I'll buy you a Greg's vegan sausage roll. How about that?
That sounds good. Sure, pal.
We'll have maladjusted on the set list.
Yeah.
I'll get you both in on the guest list, if there is a guest list.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. That's the $8 I was going to make that night. Oh well.
Oh, sorry. We'll leave you a tip.
No, I'm sure the Nando's will make up for it. You know what I mean?
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Craig. And like, obviously, we appreciate you just taking the time out of your schedule to just have a chat with us and kind of shoot the breeze. It's been really, really awesome.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much for having me. I hope you understood what I was saying along the way. I pulled it out of nowhere a little bit, but it's on my mind, the nature of the world we live in today. So thanks for dealing with that.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
All right, fellas, thank you very much. And I look forward to checking this out when it's released, and I'll plug it before it comes out. Give me a little heads up.
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Well, what an interesting chat. What a legend Craig is as well.
Literally a living legend.
I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. It was, as I say, it was a great honor to speak to someone who has, you know, been in an immensely successful and influential and awesome band for such a long time. So thanks again to Craig.
Yeah. And I think it's even cooler the fact that we got to talk to him about things like growing tomatoes and some things outside of hardcore.
And cheese and onion pasties.
Cheese and onion pasties, yeah. I want to find the shower curtain that he was talking about, the CBGB's one.
Yeah, that kind of seems like something you would have as well. So you need to source that.
Because I'm a merch machine. Also, we should mention a book that Lou and Pete from Sick of It All, I think it's coming out either, I think it came out yesterday, called The Blood and the Sweat, the story of Sick of It All's Collar Brothers. I want to order that, but it sounds ace, so I think you should definitely check that out.
I'll be reading it.
You will be reading that goddamn book.
I'll read you in a minute.
But yeah, big up Craig. That was absolutely awesome. Like, I feel I've genuinely, like, we recorded that about a week ago before today, and I still just genuinely feel honoured that we got to have a chat with him, and he took even just an hour out of his time to speak to us. It was immense.
Yep. So, let us know what you think on Instagram. Check us out at Too Old for This Pit if you haven't done it yet.
Check out Bull's Anthem by Sick of It All.
Yes, tune. And can we tell them who the next guest is? Do you think we should?
Yeah, let's do it, because I'm super excited for this as well. It's like one after the other.
Yeah, this is awesome. So our next guest is Justin Schlossberg, who used to be the frontman for one of the most influential British post-hardcore bands, Hell Is For Heroes.
And arguably, Neon Handshake, their debut album, is one of the best produced albums of all time. It's just
so good.
It's just crushing. But they broke up. Well, they haven't broken up. They're still kind of together doing tours every now and then. But maybe if you're not familiar with them, check out Hellas for Heroes, because like Neon Handshake, one of the best albums of all time.
It's something else. You should go and listen to it. Stop listening to this and go and listen to that. Do it.
Stop listening to us and listen to someone else, God damn it.
All right, man. I'll catch you next time.
Sweet, you go pick up Logan.
All right. Catch you in a bit, mate.
See ya.